Hello and welcome to the Football Diary podcast, where this week we'll be discussing how Antony announced himself against Arsenal, Tony's treble takes all 3 points against Leeds for Brentford, and Chelsea's newest addition that really helped them to success is obviously VAR.
Hey, thanks for joining us once again at the Football Diary podcast. As you can see, it's a full house of the three of us. Miles is back from his trip to Italy and what looked like an incredible trip to the Stadio Olimpico, mate. How did it feel? Did it live up to the expectations in your head?
It was incredible. It was honestly a lifelong dream fulfilled. And the atmosphere there was just outstanding. It was a sellout crowd. It was, yeah, I've never seen a football crowd like that. And I've been to enough football in my life to have witnessed something similar. But that was just next level. And even for a boring Mourinho 1-0 win with a goal from Chris Smalling from a corner, which is the most Mourinho result ever. Especially when you then think after he scored, he took off Dybala and brought on Nemanja Matic. Like, it couldn't have been more Jose. But the crowd loved it. So, yeah, it was phenomenal.
Yeah, it looked great, mate. Really good to have you back as well. So I wish we could talk about that in some detail, but we've got so much football to get through. But I'm going to start at Old Trafford. Indulge me a little bit. United, a gritty 3-1 win, because it was quite an open game, really, between the two sides. Two sides that haven't really been at the peak of the game for a number of years, but it feels like they're both trying to get back to some kind of level, aren't they? And the game certainly lived up to some previous expectations of this tie, whereas in previous seasons, I think we found it not as spectacular as it used to be back in the old days. But from an Arsenal perspective, Miles, how do you think they'll be feeling? Because it was a pretty even game overall. So to lose 3-1, they'll be absolutely disappointed with that, won't they?
I think they will, yeah. To be honest, they started the season so strong and we've seen their new signings really help that team develop. But this is their first real major test of the season. And I say that considering they beat Villa in their last game. So it's annoying for me. But in this game, I think they can feel hard done by in moments. But I think we kind of saw the soft underbelly of Arsenal that we've kind of been used to over the past in a few moments too. Yeah. I think there were enough personal errors and little mistakes there that really, had they avoided that and had they been a bit more organised or composed in some key moments, the game could have gone very differently. I think Ramsdale probably should do better for the first goal. He just assumes Antony's going to hit it on his right foot and jumps completely across and sold the whole goal to Antony. And I thought that was a bit poor. Ben White obviously has been playing right back this season and just couldn't keep up with Rashford twice, left way too much space for them. And Odegaard probably should have scored in the first half as well. So there were little moments where you think, had that gone another way or had they been a bit stronger, it would have been a different result. But United keep on winning, which is fantastic for them.
It's, yeah, well, five games now. They were five games of win, one in a row, wasn't it, up until this point for Arsenal. So I've seen some of Arsenal Twitter getting well ahead of themselves about Invincibles 2.0 and things like that. It's nice to see them brought down a peg or two, but it was a bit of Arsenal naivety, I think, wasn't it, ultimately, the kind of was their undoing, because they had the lion's share of possession, Dave, but how did United win it if that was the case? What was the difference between the two sides?
I think one thing I'd like to point out, I think, and I'll get mentioned after the game, is how well we played in that initial first 10, 15 minutes. We literally dominated the game. Arsenal couldn't get a foothold in the game. And it was that moment where they scored the disallowed goal that kind of swung the momentum in their favour. And I think kind of jolted United a little bit and actually knocked us off our game. And I was a bit of a shame, really, because it was enjoyable just kind of seeing United actually being able to control the game. We just can't do it consistently throughout 90 minutes there, which is obviously quite frustrating at the moment, but it's, you know, baby steps. Mm-hmm. And just to see us get results at a time when we obviously really needed it after the first two losses, two terrible losses. So, yeah, I think two massive pluses, I think, for me and myself. I'll admit I've even called that he's obviously not good enough. I thought McTominay was absolutely superb in midfield and has really surprised me how well he has actually been playing this last couple of games. And to think that he's actually keeping Casemiro out of the team at the minute, I don't know whether there's an element of match fitness to that as well, whether he's kind of getting up to speed and adjusting, obviously, to, you know, English life. And But I'm, you know, I can't really fault McTominay. I think he's, you know, made himself really difficult to play against. He's played forward really. I think what stands out really well to me is the difference in play, in transitional play, and those passes into the forward players. It's something that was just completely absent all of last season. I'd probably say the last 2 or 3 years. It's just completely, it's not been there, and yeah, that's a joy to see. And obviously Eriksen's been a big part of that. He was also really in this game again. So yeah, exciting times. And there was a few tactical tweaks in the game, but which I thought were really clever by Ten Hag. One of them, which I think a lot of fans were probably thinking, well, this is a bit odd. We were kind of shouting out for some legs, and he brought Fred on around 60th minute. And I think that was quite clever in that it seemed to close off the channel that Arsenal was sort of dominating. He kind of played off the left, Fred, when I think a lot of people were thinking we need to get a Lang on because we need some legs. And obviously, when he did get Fred on there, almost kind of nullified Arsenal. I think when we scored that second goal anyway, it obviously did, you know, deflate them massively. But I think we gained a foothold in the game by having Fred in that area, and he just was able to kind of win back possession. And we, you know, we looked a lot better after we got that second goal. We kind of were looking really like we were struggling. It looked like, because when Arsenal got that equaliser, it was one-way traffic for, you know, a good 10-15 minutes.
Yeah, it very much deserved, I think, the equaliser as well. And it was Arsenal pressure that was coming for a long, sustained period, wasn't it? So you could feel it coming, and they deserved it. They didn't capitalise on the momentum, though, which is, I think, where they kind of didn't really take the opportunity they had to take this game to United in the second half. But looking at United, Miles, I think back to the first two games of the season and the sort of doom and gloom me and Dave were feeling after Brentford. What's changed in such a short space of time? Because the team looks unrecognisable, doesn't it?
Yeah, so I've obviously not been on since United went on this winning run. So it's quite nice for that to have continued and to be able to talk about it. I think Ten Hag's system is starting to come across a lot more. And some of that is down to his selection. It's the difference between having Maguire in there compared to Martinez and Varane is so big. And taking Luke Shaw out for Malacia as well. These players just understand how Ten Hag wants to play. And that's why I think Casemiro is not quite come in yet. He's still learning the system. He's still integrating into the team. Whereas I think he said openly that Antony knows his system. Antony probably knows his system better than any Man United player will. So it's very easy for him to just get started straight away. And that showed in this game. His goal was fantastic. I think, obviously, Ronaldo is the one where you kind of wonder where that plays out. Maguire won't get back in the team now. Shaw won't get back in the team now for a while. Ronaldo, it's going to be difficult to keep him out of the team for a while. The impact he could have coming off the bench is interesting. And there'll be games where I would expect Ronaldo to play more. Ones where United are anticipating that they are going to have more of the ball, he may start to play a bit more because they don't need to break as quickly. But I just think that the philosophy is starting to show. The players are starting to click, and he wasn't afraid to make those big calls. And it's nice to see that pay off for him. It really is. And like Dave said, to me, one of the biggest differences is Christian Eriksen. We talked about his signing massively. We even did a separate video on the impact that it might have and what it meant for him. I don't think any of us anticipated that he would be that number eight for every game. And he looks undroppable at the moment. It looked like it might be someone who could play that role, could cover for Fernandes, maybe could cover on the left-hand side, and he was just there to add versatility. Well, actually, he's an integral part of the team now. His link-up with Bruno Fernandes and Rashford is amazing. And given Bruno Fernandes the captain's armband has kind of rekindled his form as well. He looks so much better. He's annoying. He gets in your face. As an opponent, you probably hate him. But his passing range has come back. I think I saw a stat yesterday saying that since his debut for Man United, no one's got more assists from open play than him. I think he's got 23 assists now from open play. That's amazing. And you're starting to see that now without Ronaldo kind of occupying the spaces just in front of him. Ten Hag's got the right players in the team at the moment, I have to say. As much of an admirer of Ronaldo as you know I am, this is working well for United.
Miles, do you think, because I've seen a lot of critics, you know, slating Jadon Sancho and saying he was, you know, he didn't have his best game. Do you think Sancho will suit United better when United are able to keep hold of possession and their possessional play, you know, in and around the box? They can dominate games. I think Sancho seems to be the sort of player who would relish being a team like that rather than being a counter-attacking player, because I just think he can knit passes together in and around the box a lot better in a possessional sort of team. Like, for instance, obviously we mentioned Man City. I just think he would suit a style of play like that where he can, you know...
I'm not sure, to be honest.
I think at the moment he's struggling to have more moments than he would like, just because he can't really pen teams in the way we'd probably like to, because I don't think we've really adapted to how Ten Hag does, you know, want to dominate games and, you know, the Ajax way yet. But I just think there's a lot more potential there for Sancho to, you know, to, I think, be a lot more effective than what he is at the moment. And we seem to be kind of playing in moments, I think.
I'm not sure, to be honest. I look at Sancho and I think he's very tactically versatile, and I think he's a lot more tactically intelligent than he gets a lot of credit for. And I think his assist record in the Bundesliga probably speaks for that. And Dortmund can be a very counter-attacking side, and we saw his strength in that area. The thing with Sancho is he's so good on the ball that, of course, possession suits him. And as long as he's confident enough to attack a fullback, that's when you see the best Jadon Sancho. The problem with United in the past is when they've tried to play with the ball, often Sancho was coming backwards. And actually, all right, in this game, he necessarily didn't have the most effective output, but he scored twice in the last two games as well. And he started to look like he was clicking. I think under Ten Hag, being coached a lot more, you have to remember he's still very young. I think Ten Hag's system suits Sancho perfectly. Because Ten Hag likes to play with wingers. He likes to play counter-attacking football, but also likes that counter-attack not to just be, I'm going to put my fast winger running down the line. It's, I'm going to play my way into this counter-attack, a bit like City do in some ways. And Sancho's very good at doing both. He will create opportunities in both areas. So I think Sancho is at the perfect club for him now because Ten Hag is there. And that system of Ten Hag, Jadon Sancho, probably Rashford or sometimes Martial and Antony, that is a great front three for the way that United could play this season, because they're all quick and actually they're all very good on the ball. So I think he'll be a big success. I've said all season and from the summer that this will be the massive breakout for Jadon Sancho in the Premier League. I think he'll be phenomenal this year.
I think
it's no surprise to see Rashford doing particularly well in these sort of games where United have less of the ball. You see us countering, you know, more prominently and more often than we perhaps would do against a team that's further down the league where we're going to dominate possession. He seems to suit these sort of games, and it's not the first time we've seen him score these, you know, these kind of goals where he's obviously running in behind. Do you think where we're going to have games where we're going to have the ball more often, do you think Martial will suit those sort of games better than Rashford, just because he can play with his back to goal, he can hold the ball up, he can link up play rather than Rashford?
I wonder if it'd be Ronaldo over the two of them, if I'm totally honest. I think Ronaldo obviously isn't necessarily known for trying to bring other players into the game, but if you've got the ball, you're going to create more chances, and that's when you want someone that's a bit more clinical. Yeah. The good thing about Antony and Sancho is they're both capable of creating their own chances very often. And Antony, for all his skill and pace, is actually very strong. And he reminds me a bit of Sterling in some ways, where he's got this really low centre of gravity and he keeps hold of the ball really well.
I think he's only about 5'9".
Ronaldo might actually be the better forward for those games. And that's why I think he'll still have a big role. Ten Hag clearly wanted to keep him. I don't think that's just press talk. I do think he wanted him at the club. And I think given time, now the transfer window is finished and Ten Hag knows he's going to be there and they can work together a bit more, I think that will be quite a good success for United. But I think both teams have players right now. The good thing is, Mike, you touched on it when you introduced this game. It's really nice seeing those two teams fight it out like that. And actually, they both have hit some really good form and look like they're back on top. I think Arsenal, although there are moments where I thought their vulnerability showed, there are still players in that team that I think the seasons they could have, particularly Martinelli, looks fantastic. Yeah. And there's been hype around him, and Arsenal fans have been talking about him for the longest time. And he looks like he's finally getting a consistent run in the team to live up to that potential. And Jesus as well. Although he didn't get a goal in this game, he still played very, very well. And United's centre-backs have been playing a lot better in the last couple of games, and he gave them a lot of problems. And had they been a bit more clinical, he could have been man of the match, and Arsenal could have had a win. But they'll have a great season too, I don't doubt. I didn't see this game and think, oh, there we go, typical old Arsenal. They're going to bottle it this season. I just saw there's a couple of mistakes they need to work through. And Ramsdale, he worries me a little bit for their chance of big success this season.
Yeah, Arsenal didn't do a huge amount wrong apart from finishing chances mainly, which I think United were so clinical at. And it's interesting to see United play a counter-attacking way. And I think that was never really Ten Hag's goal, was it? To sort of play counter-attacking football. And he's even said in his post-match interviews, ultimately what I want to do is just control the game, control possession. And I think that's a long way off for United still. But the style of play that they're adapting to with the players they've got is interesting, and it seems to be working for now. In terms of Arsenal, though, what do they do to learn from this, Miles? What do you think Arteta's going to look at and go, look, we've played five really good games. We've really sort of made a mark on the Premier League. This is a blip. It was a big test for both teams, really, for different reasons. What do Arsenal learn, and how do they change the way they played in this game and adapt going forward?
To be honest, I don't think they will change too much because it was down to fine moments. Yeah. I think the biggest change is against bigger sides, I think you've got to look at that defensive line and whether Ben White is the right player in these sort of occasions, particularly kind of playing on the right-hand side as well. He couldn't match up to Rashford and Sancho very often. They will have to learn through that. And obviously they've got Tomiyasu, who's fantastic. They will rotate through that defensive line a bit more. And I just think Ramsdale reminds me so much of that typical British keeper that we've had over the last 10 years, the Joe Harts, the Jordan Pickfords, where they're capable of these moments of brilliance, but don't seem to have the right decision-making at times. I've seen it a lot of Ramsdale over the last season and a half. He's undoubtedly a phenomenal shot stopper, and he has occasions where he looks like a world-class goalkeeper. But for example, the first goal, he sells the goal to Anthony. He hasn't done his research on a new player. He expects Anthony to hit that with his right foot, and he goes near post and he leaves the whole goal. For Rashford's first goal, he kind of comes, he doesn't quite come, and then it was just easy for Rashford. He didn't make his decision properly. And we've seen Ramsdale do that time and time again. Even against Villa, we scored a direct corner. That shouldn't be happening to a Premier League goalkeeper, but he doesn't really know how to position himself. He flaps about it. Douglas Luiz did that a week earlier, and it's been all over Villa's Instagram that he's been doing it in training as well. So it was an obvious thing that they were going to try, and he just didn't seem capable. So I just think he needs coaching. He needs someone to help him through those decision-making, and Arsenal will be a lot more secure because actually they have got some very good defenders. Saliba looks amazing. Gabriel looks brilliant again. They look a lot more organised. And had Odegaard scored when he had the ball squared to him, had Saka maybe taken another chance, which could have been a penalty, by the way. At one point, Saka had a shot. Malassia completely wiped him out off the ball. And no one seemed to make anything of that. But it's a different game. Yeah. I will say the other thing as well, though. Their disallowed goal. There were a lot of bad decisions made this weekend. That wasn't one of them.
He had a good Odegaard look at it as well, didn't he? Really watched the replay a few times.
I don't understand this whole, it's soft. A foul is a foul. Yeah. Tries to win the ball off Eriksen. He doesn't touch the ball. He goes through the back of the player. That's a foul. I don't understand any debate about it, really. Whether there was a lot of contact or not, he doesn't make contact with the ball. Fundamentally, that is a foul. So
they need to big something up else,
Yeah. That's what Roy Keane said, didn't he? He's sick of Arsenal's excuses. But actually, if I was Arsenal, I'd just get the game out of my mind as quickly as possible. Because like you say, they've had an amazing start to the season. They don't need excuses. They lost a game at Old Trafford. That's not something to be too embarrassed about, really. It happens. It could have been their game on a different day. Move on. Just keep going as you have been so far this season.
Yeah. Really entertaining game and a good one to start the show with. But I think the next one I'm going to move on to, probably might steal it as the most entertaining game of the weekend. Brentford 5, Leeds 2. And again, two teams that are really showing their credentials to finish higher in the table this season, against all the odds as well. So yeah, the star of the show for this particular game has got to be Ivan Toney with an unbelievably skillful hat-trick. I mean, we talked about Erling Haaland last week, and he's since scored another hat-trick after that. But this hat-trick for me is it had it all in terms of showcasing Toney's ability.
Toney steps up. Fabulous goal from Ivan Toney.
It was phenomenal. Dave, what did you make of it? Did you see much of the goals? I just thought it was out of this world.
Yeah, obviously a thoroughly entertaining encounter. I think Brentford have been a bit of a mixed bag this season. Obviously, they've had two brilliant, you know, they've not lacked goals in games this year. Obviously, we've been on the receiving end of really bad scoreline. They've carried on from last season where they've obviously been, they're just a really entertaining team to watch. And, you know, man of the hour, Ivan Toney.
Yeah.
What happened? He's 27 now, I think. He's in his prime. You've got to say, you know, there should be some teams there eyeing up, I think, a big move for him, really.
That's what Miles
said. I said it all window. I couldn't understand why a big club weren't coming in for Ivan Toney. And he's been amazing. 5 goals this season there?
Yeah, well, you look at the stats overall, and I think he's one of the most informed English strikers. And in a World Cup year, you know, he's creeping up that pecking order, isn't he, really? Yeah.
Because he can do everything.
He almost seems like he'd be the perfect player, I think, especially, yeah, for obviously the likes of Villa. You look at Leicester, probably, you know, let's be honest. Realistically, it's not going to happen because of the finances. But someone like them, he'd be perfect fit for. So I'll be really surprised if somebody doesn't go for him, potentially January. But I don't think
there's a Premier League team that he doesn't improve the squad of.
No.
No. There's not.
He's not going to start for City, for example, but he's exactly the sort of player City would have signed a few years ago to kind of like the Wilfred Bonny, basically. He's
not, you know, there's a lot of talk of the likes of Mitrovic and Toney. People are talking about Hopkins as well. You know, there's not a lack of quality strikers in the league at the minute, that's for sure. So I'd be surprised if somebody didn't come in for him, but in terms of the game, yeah, I mean, he was obviously the deciding factor in the game.
It was just end-to-end from both teams, wasn't it? And I think Leeds are an example of that approach that they've taken on this season as well. They've kind of gone for broke in every game they've played. It's been full throttle. We've talked about the signings that they've made as well and how they've improved their squad. And, you know, with losing a couple of key players, you wouldn't know. They've actually changed the way they play so dramatically. They're competing. We're talking about teams now that are 8th and 9th in the Premier League with Brentford and Leeds, and they deserve to be. So from a Leeds perspective, they'll be gutted to have lost by 5-2 because it didn't really reflect the pattern of the game at all. They were well in it for long periods until, what, the last 10 minutes where Brentford finished them off. So as a Leeds fan, Miles, how are you feeling about this season now? Do you look at this defeat and go, do you know what, that's knocked the wind out of our sails, or do you look at it with optimism?
I thought you were calling me a Leeds fan then. I was very insulted for a second. Shocking. No, do you know what? I think you've got to be optimistic as a Leeds fan, because as much as they love Bielsa, the way that last season finished, Jesse Marsch has clearly taken them on to a next step now. Their signings have been fantastic. This was one of those games. It happens where all of a sudden, if you really go for it, as Leeds seem like they're going to this season, this will happen to them. This won't be the only time this season that Leeds concede a lot of goals in a game. But you have to take that risk sometimes. And Leeds will not be in a relegation scrap this year if they continue the way that they are. And that's an improvement on last year. So I think you've got to be optimistic still. You've got to look at it as a few moments of brilliance from a player that's bang in form have cost you. And it's frustrating. It is. No. If it was Villa, I wouldn't be able to look at it that objectively. But I think Leeds are in a good enough position that they don't have to be concerned.
Yeah. So moving on through the games, because we've got a lot of football to get through. Merseyside derby, touch on quickly. Everton, Liverpool, really entertaining game. I think one of you guys, I think it might have been Dave, said it was the most entertaining 0-0 we've seen so far. What did you make of that, Dave? I mean, what does it tell you about the two teams and their ambitions this season? Where does that leave Liverpool now? I think Jurgen Klopp even said they've had exactly half the amount of points that were available to them so far. So they'll be disappointed with the draw again, won't they?
Liverpool need to address their defence and how easy they are to break through and quickly, because it's not just, you know, the big teams that are finding. Obviously, we saw it how many times, you know, United really get that game. United could have easily scored 3-4 goals. It's the smaller teams, you know, the weaker teams in the league that are finding it easy to cut through them. Yeah. And that's got to be concerning as a Liverpool fan. And it doesn't seem to be getting any better. It happened numerous times in this game. If Everton just had that final ball, that extra bit of quality, you know, there were some big chances off of both teams. But yeah. Liverpool need to be winning them these games if they want to win the title. And I just can't see it. I just don't think they're going to be competing for it. They're just dropping too many points, especially in games where you'd expect them to win as well.
I didn't expect that much of a bold statement there, Dave. Blimey.
No, I think he's right, though, because the thing with Liverpool is you've got to bear in mind they played, 64 games last season. They've been hit with some injuries this year. They haven't, I don't think they've improved their squad, because as good as Darwin Nunes might be, he's not as good as Sadio Mane. So you're expecting them to have dropped off. They brought in Artur, who Juventus can't believe their luck that someone's taken him off their hands. It's such a non-Liverpool signing. Usually they're very well thought out, Liverpool's buys, and he is not a good signing for them, really. Watch me eat my words now as he comes on to have a great season, but I can't see it. He's not someone who's lived up to his hype at Juventus. He doesn't seem to be that bothered by football there. I can't see that working out very well. And actually, a better side than Everton, batter him.
Well, quickly on Everton, if you can, Miles, as well. I mean, they've made a fair few signings themselves. Some good ones as well on paper, but the only forward line addition they've made is Neil Mopay, who seemed to be everywhere in this game, but just couldn't score. So how do you rate their chances now?
What do you expect? When you look at Brighton, for example, who have been known for the last 2 years of being this team with this massive XG, but just don't convert chances, they drop Neil Mopay, score 5 goals against Leicester, and you go, we'll buy the striker that we know literally doesn't score goals for the team that creates the most chances in the league.
Well, he had a goal,
he's not going to score goals for you either, is it?
You are. He had a golden opportunity about 6 yards out, and it's straight to the goalkeeper.
Like, I know Everton are kind of slim pickings in the market. They're trying not to spend too much money. They brought a few players in for decent fees, but I don't think they had money for a big striker. And I think they're still banking on Calvert-Lewin coming back. So they were never going to spend big money. But I'm not inspired by their signings other than Onana.
They're 14 million they bought him for. You're spending that kind of money. Why not spend it on somebody who's up and coming? Like Brereton Diaz for Blackburn Rovers looks an absolute revelation for them in the championship. Yeah. Guaranteed he will be the sort of player that, for instance, if Brentford got rid of Ivan Toney, he would be coming into Brentford. And probably...
Yeah, definitely. 100%.
A quick one thing we haven't talked about as well is the first casualty of the managerial sack race, which was Scott Parker at Bournemouth. They actually bounced back from their massive thrashing to Liverpool by beating Forest 3-2 away in Parker's first game since Parker's sacking. What do we make of that, Miles? I mean, that was premature by any club standards, I think, 3 games in. But the comments he was making to the press, it was almost inevitable, wasn't it? Fair, do you think?
The 9-0 was just an excuse, wasn't it? It was really easy to sack him after that result, even though it was to Liverpool. It's really harsh. If you look at the teams that they played this season, they took 3 points from Villa. And then they lost to City, Liverpool, and one other, I can't remember who, maybe Arsenal. So you don't expect them to be any better off than they were. Maybe not a 9-0 loss. But he clearly wasn't happy there, really. No. They weren't happy with him making so much noise. But you talk about how lucrative that promotion from the Championship to the Premier League is, and that it could be worth up to 300 million.
Yeah.
As a manager that's just achieved that, you do expect some of that in the window, and they haven't spent much. They're really going on the model of, if we get relegated, we'll keep that money, we'll build and go again, I think, is probably the plan. But they've not long been in the Premiership, so you'd think that they'd be a bit more financially stable. So, they'll get relegated this season.
A bit ironic, really, isn't it? Because, obviously, he's left a team that have also got promoted this season. They've actually backed the manager in Fulham. Really well. And obviously... Parker's no longer there, looks like they might have a good chance of staying up. So,
oh, they will. They look great.
Fulham doing okay despite losing 2-1 to Spurs this weekend. But just a word quickly as well on Leicester. We've spoken about the pressure that Brendan Rodgers is under. Is it realistic now, after losing 5-2, was it, to Brighton, that Rodgers is under threat, his job is under threat? Or do you think there's just no viable alternative for Leicester to go to after him?
I think he'll be gone this week. I'll be amazed if he makes it through the end of this week.
Of his own accord, though, or do you think he'll be pushed?
Either. It'd be one of those mutual consent ones, won't it? I think it's mental with Leicester. They've obviously, we've talked about it already, but the window that they just had was atrocious. It's absolutely terrible transfer window, and it looks like it's not even finished for them. Soyuncu's looking like he's going to move to Turkey this week as well. So that's more depth from their squad gone. It's a casualty there, and I'm really worried about Leicester, to be honest. They could get relegated. I don't think it's a stretch to say it, that there isn't a more obvious candidate for their job than Brendan Rodgers right now. You can't see anyone being attracted by that project after the transfer window they've just had. So, yeah. But Rodgers doesn't like to stick around when things get difficult either. So, he'll be gone by this week, I think, particularly if they lose to Villa at the weekend.
Well, looking at the way that Leicester are sort of playing out this season, it is a case of they're just going to get by and aim to not get relegated. And where's the ambition for Brendan Rodgers? You know, if he wants to build on the success he's made with the club, he's not going to get that this season. He's got to wait another 12 months, you know. Why write off a whole season of his career? Yeah, I think I would go if I was him, to be fair. Yeah, it's a tough one.
The other thing is, obviously, they lost 5-2 this weekend as well, but it felt very different to the Leeds game. Yeah. Leeds felt like they were in it for most of the game. Leicester looked like they were just trying to lose that game at times. And obviously, Brighton are fantastic and are playing very, very well at the moment. But Leicester never looked like they were in for a chance, even at a point where they were leading, I think. So, yeah, it's not good for them at all.
Another team that's found themselves around the bottom of the table so far, but probably not in the same sort of way that Leicester have, is West Ham. They'll be gutted to have lost 2-1 to Chelsea this weekend. I'm sure you guys have got a lot to say about the circumstances around that defeat. Dave, I'll start with you. This has caused a lot of controversy because, obviously, you see, West Ham should have equalised. Should have? Well, that's the debate. Should they have equalised? Should the goal have stood for what was perceived to be a foul on Edouard Mendy before the goal went in? How did you see it, Dave? When you've seen the replay so many times, does it look any worse or any better for you?
I mean, the thing is, obviously, when these goals are scored, it doesn't help, I think, sometimes when they slow them down in slow motion. Mm. You know, actually, how much contact or was there much of, you know, an impact there? And, yeah, for me, it should have been a goal. It was an equaliser and then wrongfully ruled out. But, yeah, I just don't understand the thinking behind it. There have been moments that obviously, you know, United that season when De Gea went down injured, although it was by his own player. He went down, didn't get off the end. The referee put his whistle to his mouth, looked like he was going to call a foul and then didn't. In this incident, it's, you know, it's been called a foul, and I just think it's overprotection, especially from VAR. I don't know why they're intervening there. I just think it was ridiculous. I know, obviously, there's been some strong words from manager Declan Rice. Obviously, put something on social media as well.
Yeah,
he apologised for it afterwards as well, which I don't think he needed to. Declan Rice put an apology out afterwards as well, which he really didn't need to.
I think because it wasn't a generic Premier League footballer's tweet. It was one with a bit of passion and a bit of heart, and they're not encouraged to say things like that in social media. So maybe his PR team gave him a reality check. Said you should probably change that and apologise.
I just think it's getting ridiculous, you know, some of these decisions that are being made. I know VAR is getting slated a lot. I think everyone just needs to remember it's not VAR, it's the people who are operating it who are making mistakes. And, you know, it feels like we've had probably a month and a half's worth of incidents in one weekend, really. Yeah. Really incidents. And I just think referees or some sort of officials need to be held accountable. I know, obviously, you get, you know, teams are on the end of really bad results, and players from the teams come out after the game and speak to the media because they're obliged, you know, to speak. And I just think maybe something like that needs to come in, because it just seems like it gets swept under the carpet, and the same referees are, you know, refereeing the following week, and it just seems like they're not being held accountable. And
yeah,
I mean, it's just annoying. Like, it's an endless cycle, isn't it? It's something
still another person's opinion, isn't it? You're asking somebody to watch a replay and go, so what do you think? And like you say, it doesn't matter how many times you watch the replay sometimes, it's still another person's opinion. It just creates more blur of opinion. And I think the decision of deciding what is a clear and obvious error is completely blurred as well. Like,
so subjective.
Really is, yeah. So is it helping out? Is it kind of as robotic as we hoped it would be in making these decisions? In some cases, yeah. I think with offside, it's made it a little bit easier. You're either on or you're not. But with things like, is there any contact? Again, the amount of contact on some of these perceived fouls or not is so minimal that where do you draw the line of what is and what isn't? Yeah, it's really hard.
A lot too much time's being spent on making these decisions. Like, for instance, the United Arsenal, that the Eriksen foul took forever to come to that conclusion. It was watching it over and over again. When you don't have to watch it once in real time and you think that's a foul, you know. Whether it's the pressure gets to them and they make obviously these silly decisions, I don't know.
Also, once the referee goes to the monitor, they may as well not go to the monitor. They just say, okay, I'll change my decision. Because you never see a referee go to the monitor and go, no, I agree with my original decision. He always changes it. So as soon as you see the referee go over, it's a waste of time. Can we just say, though, that officiating aside, the standard of football in this game was absolutely terrible. I could not believe we were watching Chelsea. And West Ham look awful as well, to be honest.
You've led me on to my next point, actually, because I was going to say it's a record outlay for them in a transfer window. Was it £255 million spent? I mean, how are Chelsea looking? Are they any better than last season for the money they've spent? What do you think?
I don't know.
It's hard, isn't it?
It felt a bit like a kid going on FIFA and doing career mode with Chelsea this year. It doesn't feel like there's much strategy to it. It was just kind of like, can probably buy him now. That'd be good. On the surface of things, the players they've signed are really good signings. Raheem Sterling is a fantastic player. Koulibaly is a great player. Fofana looks like a brilliant generational talent that will come leaps and bounds at a big club. I genuinely think that. But I look at Chelsea right now, I think you're worse than you were last season. It's weird. Obviously, they've lost Rudiger. They lost Christensen. They've lost Marcus Alonso. They lost Werner and Lukaku. And Werner, by the way, is doing great again, of course. Lukaku was injured for the Milan derby, but I don't know what to make of Chelsea right now. When they started with Amanda Brozier up front, I don't think he's good enough yet. The midfield still looks weak. I mean, they brought in Denis Zakaria.
Yeah.
A bit underwhelming. They brought in Aubameyang, who I think is a great signing. I'll be totally honest. A player of his proven quality, a player who's played in the Premier League, and you can get him for as low a fee as that was. That is a brilliant signing. As long as he keeps his head down, I think that's a great signing.
A bid turned down for Milan striker as well. Is it Leao?
Yeah, but a big bid. Milan said they wanted 170 million, though. It was like meters buyout clause, we're not going to sell it. And then he's gone and scored two and got an assist in the Milan derby this weekend and won it for AC Milan. So you can see why they want to keep him.
Yeah.
But even he's not really a striker. He's like a left sided forward. And they've got Sterling there now. So there's no strategy to any of this.
No, I mean, Tuchel doesn't even look happy, does he? Every time you hear him or see him, for the money he's spent, he's been backed massively by Todd Boehly. And you just think, well, is he going to still think about this team and go, do you know what, we can challenge? It doesn't look like he feels convinced. I found that really odd as well. Is that everything he could probably want? Are these his signings?
I don't think it is everything he wanted, to be honest. I think that's the biggest problem with it. Aubameyang seems like a Tuchel signing because he's played with him before. He needed someone in those forward positions. He's quite fluid across the front three. Short of that, they're all good players, but it feels a bit like square pegs in round holes.
Not only that, I just think they've lost a lot of character from the players that have left the club.
Yeah.
Some big personalities from the dressing room, and they've replaced them with players that are going to take a while to bed in. You know, you can't just replace that kind of energy that the likes of Azpilicueta as well is probably the only one really that kind of feels like a Chelsea mainstay. All the other Chelsea mainstays, the likes of Alonso and Rudiger, have gone, and it feels a bit odd. It doesn't feel like Chelsea. The identity's kind of gone a little bit.
Losing Rudiger is huge for them. It's so sad for them, really. Obviously, they didn't want to lose him, and I think he probably would have stayed, could he, if things had been a bit different. But I don't know what to make of Chelsea. They don't look good. I don't think Tuchel will be there at the end of the season either.
Wow.
I feel quite confident of that. They don't look like he's going to click for them properly, and I don't think he seems happy, like you say.
No. I feel like the pressure's sky high for him as well because of the money spent. So he has to produce. And I think on the evidence of the game we saw this weekend, he's going to take a while to at least get the players to gel. But then if it's not his team as well, then he's never going to get them playing the way he wants them to, is he?
Yeah. If Boehly is as involved as it's said he is, and he wants to be like that going forward, Tuchel is not his guy. Tuchel is not a yes man. He likes arguing with the board. He likes demanding things. And I think at some point, Todd Boehly will go, I might bring my own guy in.
I agree. And I think it's a bit like PSG all over again for him, isn't it?
For Tuchel. Feels like it.
That kind of environment. Anyway, moving on through the rest of the games before we wrap up. Obviously, Newcastle Crystal Palace was a 0-0. More VAR controversy there, which, like you said, Dave, it was a massive weekend of VAR controversy all in one go. We saw Forest lose to Bournemouth. We saw Wolves beat Southampton. And then we also saw Aston Villa draw to Manchester City, taking points off the champions. Wouldn't have seen that coming at the start of the game, and an unexpected fight from the villains there. So what was your take on it? What was the atmosphere like at the game as well? Because it looked like the crowd were really up for it too. And that always makes a difference for Villa, I think. I think when they've got this 12th man behind them, it really changes the energy of a game. And I think that worked in their favour massively this time around.
More support than I expected, if I'm totally honest. Gerrard should leave. We should still sack Gerrard and get a better manager. I'll be very clear. But this was great. I think it was a really good performance. It wasn't necessarily pass the ball across the deck and play really well, but they did a job. I honestly think Tyrone Mings dealt with Haaland better than I've seen anyone deal with him so far this season. And typically, it was the one moment where Haaland put himself on concert that he got the goal. I thought Mings was brilliant. Ollie Watkins was absolutely outstanding. It was the best I've seen him play in a really long time. His forward play in this game was just so good. He ran Man City ragged at times. He held the ball up when Villa didn't really have possession for a while. And really, had our midfield been slightly stronger, we might have taken more from the game. John McGinn needs to not be the captain. I love him, but he has been the worst player in a Villa shirt this season by some distance. It looks like the armband is weighing too heavy for him. Leon Bailey needs to play every game. He looks electric. Him and Watkins look like they worked really well together, which was strong. And again, refereeing and officiating cost us. Coutinho scores a perfectly good goal, but because the linesman and the referee don't officiate the way that they should, it doesn't stand. Now, don't get me wrong, City were brilliant again, and on another day, they would have probably scored 5 or 6, and probably should have, but a 37-year-old Ashley Young was outstanding, and Villa set up incredibly well at the back for a change. And Haaland is that kind of player where give him one moment and he'll get the goal. But that's all it needed, really.
But how did City actually lose points in this game? What did Villa do differently from the Villa we've seen from the start of the season? I mean, you've had a lot to say about Gerard Miles, and you've had a lot to say about the way he's kind of almost disrupted any kind of positive atmosphere in the dressing room so far this season. You're clearly not a fan. But how did this result come about? What was different?
I think the players took it upon themselves a lot more. It seemed like they were really up for the game. The leaders in the squad really stepped up. I love Matty Cash. I'm not saying for a second that he shouldn't play, but obviously his injury meant that Ashley Young came on. And it was another leader on the pitch. And when you're in a game where you're going to have to defend for 90 minutes, you're going to have to be organised. That really helps. Emi Martinez obviously didn't have the best time against Arsenal. So he seemed really, really up for it. And he's a massive leader in that Villa squad now and really helps organise the back line. Mings was outstanding. I thought he was so, so good. I thought he really played well. And that really helps. And they just looked way more organised. And I hate to say it. Normally, when you look at a team's tactics like that and you say that they're more organised, you'd credit it to the manager. But I don't know if I do in this case.
That was I really. It sounds like you're really lavishing Gerrard with praise, but who are you crediting?
No, he's got to go. He has to go now. The annoying thing is, this point will buy him at least 3 or 4 weeks. If we lose to Leicester this weekend, you have to get rid of him because Leicester have been terrible. It's difficult because there's no one on the market. Really, a lot of very ambitious fans are asking for Pochettino, and I'm not convinced that will happen. I would love it if we went to Brighton and tried to get Potter. I don't think that might... he's from Birmingham and supposedly is a big Villa fan. That is the only pulling power that we might have there. I can't see it happening. I don't know. I think the end of the transfer window showed that the club aren't certain about Gerrard. We brought in Jan Bednarak and Dendonka on deadline day. Both experienced Premier League players, but they're not £40 million signings that you might give to a manager that you really trust in that moment. I don't know. This squad is so much better than where we are right now.
It
really is. But it feels like every decision that's being made is the wrong one at the moment. And this game was probably the best example of Gerrard this season, but it's still...
Do you think it's a bit of a shame that Gerrard didn't have the full season last season just to kind of see...
We'll be relegated.
No, I don't think it would have been. I just think in terms of just to see what he was capable of, because then, at least if it didn't work out, he could have made the decision in the summer. Okay, you know, it's not working out. And then at least you're in a stronger position to get a manager in who's good enough rather than...
Yeah.
5-6 games in and you're thinking
it is an awkward time.
Do you know what I mean? At least then you could look at the likes of Potter, who now, let's be honest, why would he want to leave when Brighton look as good as they are in the season? Same goes for Leicester as well. Same goes for Brendan Rodgers. Obviously they had a very topsy-turvy season last year. They've put themselves in a terrible position, really.
Sacking a manager a week after the transfer window ends is never a good idea, really. You tend to find that they at least get through to the first international break. With the World Cup coming this year,
it's a whole different
story. And Gerrard had joined at such an awkward time where his record at the end of last season was terrible, but you could argue that it was because he was getting to know his side. It still looks terrible. I don't think he's good enough. I don't think he's a good enough manager. I don't think we saw enough of him to think that it would work for Villa's aspirations. I know where Villa are in the league and where they have been over the last couple of seasons. But with the money they've put into the club, with the vision of the owners, with the amount of money they're spending on the stadium expansion and the work they're doing around the ground now, they clearly have aspirations of getting back into Europe consistently. That job's too big for Gerrard. He should have gone to a lower level Premier League team. And unfortunately, he's taking Villa to that level rather than helping them excel to where they should be. So he needs to go. I don't know who I want because I don't think there's necessarily an obvious candidate. In all honesty, I want Dean Smith, but that won't happen, obviously. He should have never sacked Dean Smith. We might not have got Coutinho in. We might not have got Boubacar Kamara in. I still think we would have been in a better place, as good as those two players are.
I think it's the kind of job that's kind of prime for somebody like Chris Wilder to come back into the Premier League.
Oh, no.
He's good.
We're way better than that. I think it would be Potter that they would go for. I don't know if they would get him. The thing is, you look at Brighton, they have sold a lot of players and not necessarily spent big money.
True.
So if you can say to Potter, keep that recruitment strategy and keep how well organised you are, but here's also a lot of money. Sorry, Brighton fans, a much bigger club with big aspirations. I'd like to think there'd be a pulling power there. I'm not convinced he would because Brighton are in such a better place than us in the league right now. But I don't know. Other than that, I think that's the only thing keeping Gerrard in the job. Or we'll end up with Rodgers, and I really don't want that either.
I think it's a big opportunity for you to get him there, or a club like Villa to get Potter, because you look at, obviously, all the, you know, the top six, really. They've all got managers that are doing fairly well. Don't look like they're going to go anywhere anytime soon. Obviously, Arteta looks like he's building something at Arsenal. So where else is he going to go, really?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a good opportunity for Villa to get him if they wanted him.
Yeah. And the other thing you've got to be mindful of is it is inevitable, in my mind, that Leicester will be looking for a new manager very soon, and so will Everton. And really, that's a very similar profile of club. So they're all going to be shopping in the same market. And look what happened to United last year. They waited too long. They missed Conte because Tottenham got there first.
Yeah.
You don't want that to happen to you. All right, it's worked out well for United in the end, in theory. We'll see. But you want to be proactive. If there is someone that you see and think, do you know what? Like Dave just said, there isn't an obvious big club for the next person to go to. Maybe now is the time to go and try Pochettino. Apparently there's been talks already. I'm not convinced by that, though.
All right, then, one word from you all, just to draw a line under this. Who's the next managerial casualty? One name.
Rodgers.
Okay. Dave?
It looks like it's going to be Rodgers.
One word, Dave. Come on.
I'm going to go for Rodgers just because I think Gerrard will get more time.
I think, yeah, regardless of the result between Villa and Leicester, I think Gerrard won't go, even if Villa lose. Depending on the nature of the defeat, if they absolutely hammered by Leicester, yeah, he's got to go, hasn't he, really? But I'm in agreement. I think Rodgers, the love's lost there between the club and the manager.
I think the thing about Rodgers is we've not really heard anything come out yet around his future.
It's been quiet.
Normally, there'll be something that comes out, a vote of confidence or something that kind of gets a reaction from the fans. And there's nothing that's come out. So I just don't know whether Leicester have actually made a decision yet or not.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's weird how it's going to play out and what will actually push him over the edge in the first place. You know, what will be the final nail in his coffin? Anyway, just to wrap up, I'm going to leave out any transfer window talk. I feel like we've run out of time. So I'm going to press you, Miles, for your hero of the week and your villain of the week, first of all, if you can, mate.
So the hero of the week for me was Antony. I just think it's brilliant.
To Antony on his debut.
He's spent so long forcing that move, basically. Did his little interview with Fabrizio Romano, begged the club to let him leave. And even through that, Ajax still did like a lovely touching tribute to him and how he brought Brazil to Amsterdam and how much they loved him. And then that early in his debut to score, I think he did 5 different celebrations for 1 goal as well, which was really funny to watch. Yeah. But yeah, a wicked week for him. So he's the hero.
Nice. I was thinking an honourable mention for Ivan Toney there. What does he have to do to get recognition?
I'll come back to him.
Go on then.
So the villain for the week, Dave's already mentioned it as well, has to be the officiating in the Premier League, full stop. We've seen so many ridiculous things this week. I think Everton fans feel begrudged by the tight offside of Connor Cody. We saw the foul on Guaita, where Willock is just pushed into the goalkeeper. Obviously, we talked about West Ham. Coutinho scores a perfectly good goal, and that's ruled out. It was an appalling week for officials. Van Dijk should have been sent off. Not could have, should have, really. That was terrible. It's not a good week for the Premier League and their officials. So they're the villains.
Go for it. Who's one goal of the week for you, mate? There's a few to choose from.
There's only one name for me, Ivan Toney. There you go. To be honest, the free kick was outstanding, but the goal to complete his hat-trick, my word, I loved that. I really don't feel like that's been talked about enough yet. The composure he shows there. I know Melier is out of his goal and makes a bit of a hash of it, but he's crowded. There are still a few defenders around there. He's on a hat-trick. It's a big moment in the game. And the way he finished that ball, it was outstanding. It would have been Alexis McAllister, but VAR got in the way and ruined that one too. So we'll go for Ivan Toney.
Another one that got ruined, Isak, midweek last week against Liverpool.
Oh, yeah.
Was a hair offside.
Well, offside is offside. It doesn't matter how thin the margins, Dave. That's the one thing you can say is sort of black and white in some ways. But yeah. Good shout there, mate. Good shout. Ivan Toney is... had a great weekend, hasn't he? But yeah, a few goals to choose from. I agree. You picked the best one there, mate. That's it for today's pod. If you can, do us a favour before you leave. If you've made it this far, you must enjoy watching what you've seen so far. If that's the case, hit subscribe for us if you can. Be a really valuable addition to our channel growing. That'd be wicked. Even a like would be really appreciated. So yeah, thank you. Guys, wicked to have you back with us. Speak to you all next week, hopefully. Thanks a lot.
See you next time.
Cheers.